Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA, your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I am Jordan Malley along with Matt Peck. We are live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. We're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls underscore Peck. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show, iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, and anywhere you find podcasts, you'll find us. Make sure to follow the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. We've got a special guest here, David Locke, creator of the Locked On Network and the radio voice of the Utah Jazz, as the Bulls and the Jazz get set to take on tonight at the United Center. We're going to talk about the state of the Jazz. We're going to do our weekly mailbag segment, as well as a look ahead at tonight's game. But first and foremost, David, thank you for coming on the show with us. And Matt, how are you?
Doing well. Excited to have David on to talk Bulls Jazz with us. And David, I got to say, I listened to your Locked On Jazz episode from yesterday, and it seems to be a little bit along the same veins of some of Jordan and I's episodes where, I mean, we're a rebuilding team this season. You guys aren't really quite there. You're kind of in the middle of the pack phase, but you seem to be, you know, venting a little bit with this three game slide the Jazz are on. Can you expand upon those frustrations you talked about in your show yesterday, particularly with this current starting five the Jazz have?
Well, the only difference between the two franchises right now is that we're on a three-game losing streak and we have major anguish, and you're on a three-game win streak with major anguish. Right? Like, you're freaking out because you're winning too much, as I was listening to Locked On Bulls. The issue is fit. The Jazz played without Rudy Gobert for a while, and in that period of time, the offense took off. They were the third best offense in the NBA for that 12-game stretch. Their offensive rating was over 110 in every night but two. They were pinging the ball around, taking a bunch of threes, making a high rate of them, and were even won six straight at one point. A little misleading because only one of those defenses in that time period was a top 15 defense. Quite frankly, that's a lot to ask if, you know, if you want a fan base to go watch a team play brilliantly for 12 games and then all of a sudden not play brilliantly, and you actually think that they're going to go then investigate whether or not they're playing good or bad defenses, seems to be maybe a little bit too much to ask, or even, you know, not a fair ask. So I think there's a little bit of a kind of a misnomer of that. Then this part two is that the fit between Favors, Gobert, and Ricky Rubio has led for an incredibly cumbersome offense. And that's pretty obvious to anyone who's watching and they're aware of it. There just aren't a lot of, as you listened to on the show yesterday, there isn't really an answer on that. Like, I mean, I guess you can bench Ricky Rubio 26 games into his run as a member of the Utah Jazz, but you're really closing the door on that. And there were some hopes that you could develop that. And, you know, Favors and Gobert are starting NBA players, so you're not going to bench one of them. You're just going to probably deal with how cumbersome that is and then evolve out of it.
Right.
So the roster right now just almost has too many like players and like style players.
So I was looking at a couple players on the Utah Jazz, and just in terms of stats, and obviously I've got to ask you about the one guy that everybody's been talking about, and that's Donovan Mitchell. Matt and I are curious about Donovan Mitchell too, because before the Chicago Bulls decided to trade Jimmy Butler and totally go on this rebuild, he was legitimately one of the guys that I thought the Bulls might be able to take at 16. And we were really interested in him. And even going back and watching him at Louisville, I remember him playing Indiana and just absolutely cooking Indiana back in December when they played each other in college. So I got to ask, what's your overall take on Donovan Mitchell so far this season? What do you think his potential ceiling is, and how can he evolve into, you know, that important piece for the Utah Jazz?
So I think it's real. I don't have any feeling that this is some pre-scouting report rookie run or something of that sort. I think it's very legitimate. He scored 20 or more points in 11 games through his first 26 or 25, whatever it is. That's the same rate that LeBron did. Just kind of put that in perspective. It's more than Paul Pierce and Dwayne Wade. So, you know, Tyreek Evans, who was on a crappy team in Sacramento, was able to do that. But to be the lead guy already on a, you know, possible playoff team is pretty incredible. His shooting is great. He has a catch and shoot game that he has not shown yet that will be added to his play with the ball in his hands a lot. His personality off the court is maybe even better. He does everything correctly. The guys admire him and like him. There's none of that rookie phenomena. I was in Seattle when there was a kid named Flip Murray, who actually I think came out somehow, was originally with Chicago or involved in Chicago in some way, who went on like a scoring rampage, and every player then went into the coach and said, I don't want to play with him anymore. Like, he never passes. there's none of that with Donovan. He's actually, I haven't checked it recently, but I think the team off his passes, he's like the fourth best in the NBA or second best in the NBA behind Chris Paul of what people are shooting off his passes. It's all real. I think he's Damian Lillard is my guess. Wow. But I think he's that good. He's got the off the bounce three. He's got things he's still got to learn. He's still a rookie, right? Damian didn't finish at the rim very well for a while. Still at times hasn't. He's going to have to figure that out. His mid range game, he's shooting 29%. But he's the real deal. And he's tired. He's playing 36 minutes a night and carrying a team. So it might be interesting to see if he's better tonight with a few days off.
As we're joined here on Locked On Bulls by David Locke, creator of the Locked On Network and the voice, the radio voice of the Utah Jazz. You can follow him on Twitter at Locked On Sports. Now, David, I mean, I'm with you. I think Jordan and I are both very excited to see what Donovan Mitchell does with his NBA career. And for the first stint of that, at least what he does for the Jazz. But something else that I thought was interesting from your Jazz Locked On Jazz episode yesterday was your discussion about Ricky Rubio, and that there might be a growing sense among Jazz fans that their patience with Rubio is wearing thin, and they feel like just, you know, 25 or so games into the first season of this Rubio experiment, they're not buying in. They're frustrated with his, you know, his shooting woes and things like that. But you highlight that that's kind of what you knew you were getting with Rubio. And you also had an interesting theory about why giving more of the responsibilities to Donovan Mitchell and, say, hypothetically shifting him to that point guard spot might be a bad thing as opposed to a good thing for this rookie who's trying to build in his first year. Can you expand upon that?
Well, I think you'll see, like, Rodney Hood's coming back tonight. So I think you'll begin to see Mitchell Hood minutes together as Rodney comes off the bench, and he'll probably come in for Rubio. And Rubio's got some Achilles issues, so that he's not on a minute restriction, but he doesn't play a lot of consecutive minutes. You'll notice his stints are short. So you'll see, I think the first substitution will be Rodney for Donovan, or Rodney for Rubio. And then you have Rodney Hood and Donovan Mitchell on the floor together. You can get the same benefit out of seeing how that works in short stints and periods of time, rather than making Donovan take over the team, run the team, lose himself. He'll lose himself in the team. As a rookie, you'd rather just have Donovan go and try things and learn his own game and figure out what he's going to do. And over the time, he'll add that point guard. I do think that's where he ends up, but this is a guy who played 8 games of point guard in 2 years of college. It's not like Lillard, right, who spent 4 years. So Lillard came in with 120 games of point guard experience. And even if you go back and look at that Portland team, that team had Wesley Johnson, Nicholas Batum, and Marcus Aldridge, and with a rookie point guard won 33 games. So it's not an easy thing to ask a player to do. And I think more than that, I think it's a pretty good way to deter, to stunt Donovan's growth. Quinn's been very good at Donovan will probably close the game at point guard. Okay, well, that's pretty big moments. Like, you're getting a lot of learning skills there. Those are also often, though, basic set plays that you're running at a certain period of time, looking for a certain matchup, rather than worrying about, like, wait a sec, this guy hasn't had a touch in a few minutes, and this guy hasn't had this, and who am I taking care of here? Those are a lot bigger issues as a point guard that you have to keep an eye on that I think cause you the problem. In regards specifically to Rubio, he's not been very good, frankly, and he needs to play better. He had a little stretch where he made a lot of shots, but that's not who he is. I've been surprised at three things on him. I've been surprised at the amount of kind of turnovers, which I like turnovers. I think turnovers are fine, particularly if they're turnovers out of aggression, where if that pass was made, it would lead to a bucket. And, right. But that has not been the case. These have been turnovers that have often just, I don't know, they weren't going to lead you to anything. And so those have been a little mysterious. There has been real signs of having not ever played on a good team in regards to the amount of possessions he kind of loses defensively. And then he just has not made a lot of passes that would open up opportunities. I just am not seeing anyone. In fact, there is not a player, I don't think, on the roster who's shooting and scoring is at a higher rate in the minutes that they're on the floor with Ricky Rubio. Just has not been able to create that for people. So I don't know if that's a transition to another team in the defense. But it has been surprising that he's not better.
So with that, talking a little bit about the Jazz, I want to get into our mailbag segment because this leads me right into our first question. So every week we have our listeners send in questions, either whether it's on the state of the Bulls, who the Bulls are going up against, or just general questions around the NBA. So this is going to spark a conversation that I think maybe Jazz fans will be quite interested in. And that's with the state of the Bulls. And obviously the Bulls being in their first year of their rebuild and now kind of surging, they're on their 3-game win streak. This is an opportunity to kind of talk about the value that is on the Chicago Bulls. So we had one listener ask us on Twitter. This is from Chuck. He said, if Nico Mirotic and Bobby Portis gain any value, what would you think an ideal trade would be? And I know, David, you were talking about that the Utah Jazz might be interested in one Nikola Mirotic.
Well, I mean, I don't know that you probably just took it further than I don't know if the Utah Jazz are interested. Okay, that's different than their Yahoo play-by-play announcer making a comment that, why are you killing this guy? And I think it's different than some fans. But Derek Favors will not be on the Jazz roster next year. That's pretty certain.
You're saying that's pretty much a guarantee at this point?
Well, I can't imagine why Derek Favors wants to be on the Jazz roster next year.
Yeah.
This is not a comment about the Jazz against Derek Favors or Derek Favors against the Jazz. But why would Derek Favors, as a free agent, sign to be Rudy Gobert's backup?
That's a right? good point.
So if the Jazz were to offer, hypothetically, here on Locked On Podcast Network trade, Derek Favors to the Bulls for Nikolai Mirotic, would the Bulls do it? What you would be gaining is a center who's 26, 27 years old, and his bird rights. So you would then be in position to sign him in the offseason. I know you have Robin Lopez, but you'd have to decide what you want to do there. And I don't know Robin's contract situation. The Jazz would be getting a stretch four to play with Rudy Gobert, who has an option on his contract for next year. On the other end, you just get out from under his contract and you get right. a sample of Derek Favors and decide whether you want him next year. Same thing the Jazz basically get is a sample of Mirotic. And then if they don't like him, they don't pick up his option. But from the Jazz standpoint, someone's got to be the stretch four next year. The Jazz have shown that they want to play with the open floor and that with Gobert at center, they probably can do that defensively. And if Quinn Snyder's offensive system has a four that can shoot it, then they're pretty good. And is that, does Mirotic do it for him? He's not a great athlete. I got that. And so you're not particularly athletic. You guys are killing his shooting. He's, you know, his 700 Nylon Calculus had a great research project that your first 753s will dictate is the number by which then you can tell what his next are. If I remember correctly, he was about 35-36% at 750, so that's not terrible. I was surprised watching the Boston game that he can bring the ball up the floor. I honestly didn't know he had that skill.
I think it's a growing skill, and I think it's one that's still fairly inconsistent. I think, you know, Bulls fans have panic attacks anytime Nico puts the ball on the floor.
I will say, watching that Boston game, it wasn't the made shots that made me change my feeling a little bit on him. It was the left-hand drive to the rack in the second quarter and bringing the ball up the floor. That ability suddenly changed. That was different to me.
So I got to ask about the one thing in terms of weaknesses for Nico Mirotic. It's one of the biggest complaints here in Chicago has been his lack of defense and the inability to be one of those harsh guys that's going to go up against on the glass and rebound. So rebounding and defending have been his two weaknesses. And also to couple that, it's also been inconsistent on the offensive end. I mean, we do get nights where we see Nico be able to put up anywhere between 20 and 30 points. But even Matt and I had talked about on yesterday's episode that the stretches of games that he is consistently putting up double figure points, and that's really what the Bulls want him to do, is being one of that main scoring options. He's only put two stretches in five games in a row where he scored in double figures over the last three seasons. And I told Matt too, since his rookie season, he hasn't eclipsed that consistency that we saw in his rookie year. And a lot of people were really excited when he was playing well, especially at the end of his rookie season. I mean, he was on first team all rookie, and he was second in rookie of the year voting behind Andrew Wiggins. I just think fans have been disappointed because they haven't seen that consistency from him. And they're frustrated too. And they're frustrated that they feel like they were sold on a guy that isn't quite living up to what they thought he was going to be. So how would he initially fit with the Utah Jazz? And do you see any of those weaknesses in terms of his defense or his rebounding being a factor if he were to hypothetically be on the Utah Jazz?
Well, I mean, you guys certainly know his game far better than we do, right? You watch him every day, and there's always that. You know, I know Rodney Hood's game better than you do.
Right.
So, you know, you probably can answer the question there is how much does Gobert, as a rebounding defensive center, cover up his weaknesses? You know, that would be the question. The other question, frankly, that I think we miss most often is who else? Right? So, you know, free agent market of stretch fours is Jabari Parker coming off two ACLs, and Milwaukee will match, and Aaron Gordon, who Orlando will match. And you got a max if you're going to try to go get him. You know, Mirotic at $12 million might be a pretty good bargain. It's 10% of your salary cap, and for a starting player, it's pretty good.
Let's move on to one more mailbag question here.
But I have a question. I have a question for you.
Okay. All right. Shoot.
So Kevin Pritchard and Gar Foreman were the two laughing stocks of the NBA in the offseason for their trade. So Kevin Pritchard is getting the last laugh. Is there any chance that Gar Foreman is about to get the last laugh too in the Jimmy Butler trade?
I think he's certainly feeling more and more confident by the day. And I know just from people that I've talked to in Bull circles that after the Butler trade went down, he knew that a lot of Bulls fans were skeptical. But then the Paul George trade happened, and Gar sent out some pretty, I wouldn't say cocky or braggadocious texts to people in Bulls media, but he definitely sent out some feelers to be like, hey, I mean, you know, look, this Jimmy Butler trade is looking a little bit better when you compare it to some, you know, now here we are a third of the way into the season, and the way Oladipo is playing, it looks like the Pacers, you know, stole that deal. But I mean, I personally think that this Butler trade looks better every day, because I didn't want to pay Butler upwards of $250 million for the back half of his prime when he's the best player on a Bulls team that's somewhere between the 4 and the 8 seed every season. To me, that seemed like a complete waste of years and a waste of money. So trading Butler made sense. And the more that we see from these pieces we got in return trading up to get the number seven pick and to take Lauri Markkanen, who projects to be a perfect, ideal stretch four in the modern NBA offense. It's looking better and better every day. Chris Dunn, after his slow start with his badly dislocated finger coming off the bench, now has won the starting job, is playing with confidence. He's attacking the hoop. He's looking to distribute. He's shooting better than we expected. Dunn is looking better and better every day. Now, obviously, the third and final piece to that trade is Zach LaVine, and we are desperately and eagerly waiting for his comeback, which it sounds like sometime will, which it sounds now will be sometime in early January. So if LaVine, if everything we're hearing about LaVine, which is he is jumping higher, running faster, et cetera, than before his ACL tear, all of a sudden this three-player package you got in return for Jimmy Butler looks better. And Gar Foreman's abilities executing trades looks better, even though he still has some pretty bad ones on his resume.
Yeah, the text messages, the braggadocious text messages are probably the most disturbing part of that story, because that's just not a good look.
No, not a good look.
But if you can go get three rotation players in a trade, that's a great trade. And if you get three rotation players and one of them turns out to be one of your core pieces, it's a really great trade.
I think we agree on that too. And I think it, from a standpoint of when that trade did go down in the summer, you looked at how angry Bulls fans were at the front office for so long. And it almost blinded them to the fact to take a step back and look at really what these pieces were. And yeah, you were getting Zach LaVine coming off an ACL injury. You were getting a questionable Chris Dunn. And then they went ahead and took Lauri Markkanen. So I think from in terms of before even seeing any of these guys on the floor, Bulls fans were so angry that they were just getting mad over everything. And I was at that point, I wasn't mad because you looked at the players that the Bulls got in return. And more so, Matt and I were excited that the Bulls actually picked a direction. I think that was the most important part of the entire trade, was that the Bulls finally decided to pick a direction, let their fans know which direction that they're going, and not kind of hang out in mediocrity, which for a while, that's what the Bulls were doing. And fans were frustrated and they were tuning out. And at a certain point, they had to realize that Jimmy Butler wasn't going to be the guy. They adamantly said that Jimmy Butler wasn't going to be that guy, that they weren't going to build around Jimmy Butler. They were going to build with him. So for them to come out and say that they were going to transition to a rebuild, it was nice. And I think to that point, too, we've seen what we've got from Lauri Markkanen and a confident Chris Dunn over these last two and a half weeks. I think has changed perspective a ton, especially early on what Lauri Markkanen's done. Now Chris Dunn with the confidence. I think if Zach LaVine can come back and be productive, and we can see flashes of a player that could be a staple in this lineup when the Bulls do try to contend, hopefully 2, 3, 4 years down the road. I think that's going to be an integral part of the trade. And I keep going back to this point too about Zach LaVine, is that I think his personality too, I think you're getting a lot more than Bulls fans realized what you're getting in LaVine. And to top that all off, he really wants to be a Chicago Bull. He said he grew up watching Michael. His favorite show is Space Jam, that he grew up being a Chicago Bulls fan because of Michael, and he wants to be in this city. So I think you're right. I think at the end of this season, and when all things are said and done, maybe 3, 4, 5 years down the line, I think we're going to look back at this trade, and the Bulls are really going to be the clear-cut winners of this one.
Yeah, don't forget, every player wants to be in the city of the Compaign.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I mean, speaking of what the Bulls rebuild is doing and hypothetical trades, let's take one more mailbag with David Locke here, and then we'll move on to our look ahead to Bulls and Jazz tonight. This is from Jimmy on Twitter. I was all for trading Robin Lopez preseason, but he's been a valuable leader. I personally would love to see him stay. What do you think? Now, we touched on Rolo briefly earlier, David. It seemed like the most common logical move would be for the Bulls to shop Robin Lopez at the deadline because he is their most valuable trade piece right now, even with Nico stringing together some good games. But we have heard reports recently that the Bulls are testing the waters on the free or on the trade market for both Nico and Robin Lopez. But in your eyes, somebody who travels around a lot, watches a lot of NBA games all over the country, if you talk about Robin Lopez as a center, personally, I think he's one of the more underrated traditional centers in the NBA right now. He's not a huge stats guy, but he does a lot for the team. He's a great leader for the Bulls right now. When you look at teams that are projected to be on their way to playoff contention this season, Do any of them jump out at you to say that team could use the skill set and services of one Robin Lopez?
I mean, I think someone like Denver really could. Frankly, I think someone like Minnesota might be able to use him. And what I mean by that is they both have these stretchy bigs who are just awful defensively.
Right.
In Jokic and Towns. I'm a Robin Lopez fan. I'm not sure I think he's underrated in this sense that I actually think people get exactly who he is. It's kind of the way I feel about Mike Conley. Like, Mike Conley's always talked about as being underrated, but he's been talked about being underrated so much that actually...
And you don't think Mike Conley's overrated?
No, I think Mike Conley's like a borderline all-star, not quite an all-star. That's exactly who he is, and he has been every day. Like, he's great.
Certainly paid like he's more than that.
Well, that's, you know, that those are different concepts. You have to keep your talent. You can't afford to lose them.
Sure, sure.
So the center trade market is three players that I'm aware of. DeAndre Jordan, Robin Lopez, and Derek Favors. Unless I'm forgetting somebody else that's out there. Maybe Brooke Lopez, depending. And then probably Timothy Mozgov is, you know, available. I don't think anyone would make that trade.
Right.
So those are those primary three are the ones that have an impact. I think Robin Lopez is the third of those three of who you'd want to move. So I don't suspect there's going to be a lot of return on him. On the other end, you know, if you look at your timeline, as I'm not as optimistic as you were, so I would put your timeline as 4 or 5 years from now, maybe three somehow, but I don't sure how I see that before your playoff competing. And so is Robin Lopez going to be a part of that group? And if he's not, then you should move him for whatever you get.
Yeah, and I think that's going to be an important idea coming down to the stretch into the trade deadline talks. One other team that I noticed too that was kind of thrown in that mix, now whether or not it's a good idea for them or not, but also Milwaukee, who you just saw recently, and Milwaukee seems like they need somebody to kind of help there in terms of winning now. I mean, it seems like a lot of people in the Bucks area are trying to talk about a team that is ready to win now and maybe take over this East in the next couple of years, over this next couple of years stretch. So maybe possible fit there. But I think the biggest thing is going to be with the Bulls is how it's going to affect the rest of their lineup. One thing that we never talked about, that we haven't talked about a whole lot, is his impact with Chris Dunn.
Let me jump in there. Why do you care how it's going to affect your lineup in the next 2 or 3 years?
I think the biggest importance, especially this season, is his ability to play with Chris Dunn. I think over these last 2 weeks, the confidence and the way that Chris Dunn has played in these 2 week stretch, it's been important with Robin Lopez. And I think he's been dominant with Robin Lopez on the floor. So that's why there has been some concerns that if he does leave,
if Chris Dunn can only play with Robin Lopez, then he sucks. No, I'm serious.
There's a clear answer.
I'm not trying to be a jerk. Like, let's just be honest. Like if you're that dependent on Robin Lopez and you're not an NBA starting point guard or even a rotation player, like, you gotta be able to figure out how to play with other players. Robin Lopez is not going to be, I'll be very surprised if Robin Lopez is on the next Bulls playoff team.
Yeah, I that's fair. I think I would agree with that. All right, we've got David Locke with us, the radio voice of the Utah Jazz, as we get ready for Bulls Jazz tonight. And we are going to take a look at that Bulls Jazz matchup. Second one of the season, the Bulls got trounced in the first go round. But before we get to that, I want to tell all of our Locked On Bulls listeners about their chances to win big with Draft. Fantasy sports fans, listen up. Did you know that your chances of winning on Draft are 80% better than on salary cap sites? That's why Draft is my favorite fantasy site. No more getting crushed by the pros. And it's not just me. More than 1 million people that have already downloaded it are playing and winning big. Play in a real live NBA draft right now. You can be done in under 5 minutes and get paid out the very next day. Drafts are filling every second, so you can join whenever you want. All new draft players get a free entry into a real money draft when you make your first deposit, but you have to use the promo code LOBULLS. That's right. Play in a real money draft for free just by using your promo code LOBULLS. And it gets even better. Draft is so sure you'll love it that they're even offering Locked On Bulls listeners a money back guarantee of up to $100. Just search Draft in your app store or go to draft.com. and come play for free right now with promo code LO Bulls. And with that, let us look ahead to tonight's Bulls Jazz matchup. Now, as far as lineup and injury concerns, I know, David, the Jazz have been dealing with a couple of injuries to key players. Rodney Hood sounds like he, unless anything comes up, a shoot around or pregame warmups, will be a go. What can you tell us about him? What can you tell us about the impending return of Joe Johnson?
Rodney was playing great before the ankle soreness. He had 12 straight games of double figures, which was the longest consecutive double figure stretch of his career. The last seven games, I think he was averaging 21 points a game. The big thing he had regained was kind of that paint non-restricted area game. If you think, I don't know how much people watch Rodney, but I kind of back you in there and just kind of float one up over you. It's not usually a high percentage shot, but it's key to his game. He's the one player on the Jazz roster that on a pick and roll shoots over 50%, or excuse me, is over 50 percentile and according to synergy and effectiveness. None of our other players off the pick and roll as our scoring threat. So he opens up the team a great deal in that regard. And then, you know, he's a scorer, right? This team needs a little burden taken off Donovan Mitchell. Joe Johnson's just Joe Johnson, man. I mean, a lot more than ISO Joe. I think that's a misleading characterization of who he is as a player. I think that's been that's a faulty characterization. He's actually a pretty good passer. He's a nice stretch four now. He's a good 3-point shooter, and he calms you in times of, you know, stress. I think if we'd had him at Oklahoma City, we'd probably win that game just because things went awry and there was no idea where to go and what to do. And you just kind of go, let Joe go to work for a minute or two and everyone calms down. So he brings that. He's still questionable for tonight. So I think he's going to play, but he may wait till Friday.
So if you're talking to Utah Jazz fans, and I want the Bulls listeners to hear this as well. Going into tonight's game, what would be your biggest stress in terms of, if you had a concern about the way the Utah Jazz would play against the Chicago Bulls team, given that they've won three straight, the Utah Jazz have lost three straight, what would your biggest concern for this Jazz team if they let this game slip away from them? What would be the biggest concern there and how they can lock up a win against the Bulls?
Well, I mean, the starting lineup's just been really bad. So, you know, the first 4 minutes of the first and third quarters, which is probably all that lineup will play, they got outscored 27-10 against Houston and 16-5 to start the game in Milwaukee. So those are so detrimental that you're then playing from behind the rest of the night. And if you have a young Bulls team that is 1-3 straight and coming off a win against Boston, probably feeling good about themselves, the last thing you really want is for them to get an early start and then think they're about to go get their fourth in a row. I would suspect that Chicago's still a bit of a fragile team where if you can kind of put them, make it tough on them and beat them up a little bit and make the game a struggle, that they'll believe that they're struggling. And so that's the area where I think the Jazz need to do. Just be really, the offense is never going to be good with that lineup. Be great defensively for the first 4 or 5 minutes, and then spread the floor and get it going. The Jazz have to win tonight. No offense to, if you look at the Jazz are favored like 3 times between now and January 15th, maybe 5, depending on your viewpoints. And so if they don't win tonight, it's pretty catastrophic.
Yeah, no offense taken, David. And we know you have to catch the bus to the Jazz morning shoot-around, so we'll let you go in just a minute. But before we do that, you just mentioned the lack of games in which the Jazz are favored coming up. I got to get your take on this upcoming Jazz December schedule to finish the calendar year. It is brutal. I mean, after us, you're in the midst of a long road trip right now. You go at Boston, at Cleveland, at Houston, at Oklahoma City, and then you have a couple more in there. Reward is getting home and playing the Spurs
on a back to back.
Yeah, on a back to back.
And then 6-game road trip. Our first game back is a back to back.
And then you got the Thunder again in there. And then you finish the calendar year at Golden State and then home hosting the Cavs after you already played them earlier in as a part of this road trip. I mean, what are you telling, you know, the Jazz fans out there who are looking at this schedule and thinking, oh my God, you know, after this Bulls game, we might not win another game until January.
So the Jazz have won 3 games in the month of December already. And if they can find a way to win another 2, it's a successful month. They can go 5-10 in December. They'll still make the playoffs. If they can not fall apart as a group collectively between now and January 15th, it actually doesn't soften up any. If you look at it, I mean, it softens up a little in the sense that it's not murderer's row, but they're still not favored. I think we're favored for five games between now and January 15th.
Hey, that's more than the Bulls are favored.
Right. Now, after January 15th, we're favored for about 16 of 20, I think.
So you just got to survive this, is what you're saying.
Right. Yeah. And right now there's only 9 playoff teams in the Western Conference for 8 spots. So what would be curious to see is if anybody in the meantime drops out. We'll probably be the team that looks like we're dropping out. And Portland is suddenly having a little bit of a trouble. So, because they've had an easy schedule to start and have a hard schedule. So it'll be interesting to watch those two and then watch probably Portland and Utah fight back to see which one gets 8 for the gift of a weekend in San Francisco while watching the best team in the NBA. Oh, actually, you might have to go to Houston this year for the one seed.
Yeah, I was going to say, they might hold on to that number one seed.
Yeah, I think they probably will. That sucks. I'd rather go to Golden. We better get the 7 seed. I mean, a weekend in San Francisco, not a weekend in Houston. Not that good.
Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Remember to follow us on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls _ Peck. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play. Anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Thank you so much to our guest, David Locke. He's the creator of the Locked On Podcast Network, and he is the radio voice of the Utah Jazz. Remember, Bulls Jazz tonight at the United Center. Maybe you can bundle up and head your way out to the United Center. If you do, shoot us some pictures on social media. We'd love to hear from you as well. Remember, we're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Locked On Podcast Network, Locked On Bulls. For Matt, Jordan, and David, we are out. We will see you tomorrow with a brand new episode. Have a great day.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.